As we come to chapter 6, his observations are so overwhelming, and his conclusions are very discouraging to realize that we all end up at the same place. Regardless of who we are, regardless of what we have, we all end up the same. And that in itself can be a very difficult reality to come to terms with, or maybe not so much a difficulty, maybe a blessing in disguise. So in moving our service time to where we have some daylight hours, it'll allow us to be able to get out and see, yes, as we're coming into services, as we leave the services, we'll be able to see a little bit better. But I think that tonight for the message, we needed some extra sunlight to remind us of what God has given us. As we look at the study of Ecclesiastes, remember that Solomon's observations that he's made up to this point are simply about what life under the sun is like and what can we find, where can we go, what can we look at, what can we pursue right here and right now with what's available to us under the sun, what can we pursue that will give us lasting satisfaction. And this is a worldview. As Solomon is looking at the world, he's literally taking a worldview, asking this question: is there satisfaction to be found in the stuff of this life right here and right now? And Solomon's conclusions, as we've been working up to this point, have sometimes been very difficult to swallow. I've had many people say, I will be glad when we can get past this section of the book, because it's been a little bit discouraging to think about how gloomy his outlook has been. But I want you to know that like here is, when we try to find our satisfaction in the here and now, how empty that is. That's the word that he uses over and over and over, vanity of vanities. It's vain. It's empty to try to find your satisfaction with stuff that you can surround yourself with. We won't find meaning in life in stuff that we can buy or stuff that we can gather. And I'm grateful for Solomon's questioning, because it does bring us an opportunity to see a healthy perspective. And from a healthy perspective, that life is certainly so much more than just here and now. The problem that we have, though, is our daily lives really just toss us to and fro. And the breakneck pace at which life moves today, it is difficult for us to find ourselves a time and a place where we can just sit down and look back upon our day or upon our days with a healthy reflection. So I'm grateful that Solomon, the preacher, has done this here, that he's asking these questions. And remember, this is Old Testament observations. This is stuff long, long, long ago. But I think that his observations are still right on, because they speak to the human condition. Today, the struggles that really do sidetrack us and distract us are what we do for our work. That's where we're headed tonight. The man who spends all of his time working and doesn't take an opportunity to try to appreciate what he's got. Where does that end up? It's the person who gathers a lot of money and a lot of wealth. And where in the world is the satisfaction to be found in having lots of money? Last week I asked you, what was your dollar amount that you would need to hit before you considered yourself wealthy? Remember last week, at the end of the message, by the time this service ended, the reality was this. We put value in dollar, terms of dollars. But when we stop and are free to look back at life and to see what all God has blessed us with, he's blessed us with so much more than just coins and paper, gold and silver. He gives us work. He gives us a job to do. We'll touch on that tonight. The money that he gives us, what's the point behind all that? We're going to touch on that one tonight. We're even going to address the issue of family as that comes full circle in the message tonight about a man who has lots of children. His life's cut short. So the pulls that we have day in and day out, what is going on at work, how we're going to make ends meet day by day because of money, or the troubles that go on in our families, that I want you to know, please be in prayer for our church family at large, because there are so many struggles that go on. The devil has been working overtime, assaulting our families. And the weights and the burdens that so many of us carry that nobody in here fully knows. But just this week, having an opportunity to spend some time ministering to a family is just overwhelming to see how much hurt and pain comes day by day. And our health issues. Our prayer list tonight was filled with people who have health issues. And certainly there's something to be said about our health that does take our perspective away from what truly matters. Or maybe our health does give us clarity in seeing what really matters. The purpose of our series is to realize that there is a greater purpose to life than simply living under the sun. And that is that a hope-filled life purposely and intentionally thrives in surrender under Jesus the Son. As we start off the chapter looking at it, a life filled with money is truly filled with emptiness. But for our passage tonight, Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verses 1 through 12, we are going to look at this common evil and then learn to be content with what we can see. Let's turn now to Ecclesiastes chapter 6. We'll be looking tonight verses 1 through 8 as we look at this common evil. Please read along with me. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet he hath seen no good. Do not all go to one place? All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet his appetite is not filled. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Let's go, Lord, in prayer, shall we? Lord Jesus, we come to you tonight and we pray for your blessings upon our time in your word. Lord, would your Holy Spirit give us some insights as to what the preacher says here, what observations he sees and the terribly tragic reality of not appreciating all that you've given us. Lord, give us purpose and meaning in our life, but may we realize also that purpose and meaning in life isn't valued by dollars or stuff. It's not counted in health even. It is based solely on life in you. Give us hope, give us joy. We ask these things in your name. Amen. Did you catch what I was talking about, how difficult the language was? The first 8 verses, the preacher creates or presents us with 2 different scenarios, and how sad it is for the man who has been so richly blessed but never enjoys his blessings. I think you see that word blessed there standing out. I hope at least you do notice that. Because the problem that we have, maybe it's a problem that's conspicuous to us just as wealthy Americans at this time of human history, we value blessing in terms of dollars. You get a fat income tax return this year. I'm sure the first things out of your mouth will be, look what the Lord has blessed me with. And let's be honest, we certainly would appreciate a little bit more coming back from our tax return. But we think about our blessings in terms of dollars and cents. We think about our blessings in terms of what people have. Well, that fellow, have you seen the size of his boat? That is absolutely amazing that the Lord would bless him with that. Do you know what I'm talking about? How we use the word blessing in reference to stuff that people has? Well, Solomon points out for us the sadness of these two different types of people who have tremendous amount of resources, they're blessed with much, but how tragic their lives are. How tragic do we see in verses 1 and 2, the life that's cut short before the wealth is enjoyed. It says in verse 2, a man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing of all that his soul desires. You remember when the Lord asked Solomon, what would you like? And of all of the logic that Solomon had, he had the wisdom, the godly wisdom, to ask for more wisdom rather than ask for riches or for notoriety or for fame. Or for legacy. The Lord added all of that to him, scriptures tell us, because he asked for wisdom. And we have here this man in this first case scenario. I think you're with me on this one. There's probably not a one of us in here that would not mind if God felt the need to let that be what our condition was, what our state was known. That God's given riches, he's given wealth, he's given honor. Is there a one of us in here that would say, I'm above that, I don't need that? I think in your heart of hearts right now, you're probably thinking, boy, that sure would be nice if that was me. But look at the latter part of what he says here. Yet God giveth him not the power to eat thereof. So you have this man that has had lots of resources. He's got lots of wealth. He's got lots of honor. People just think the world of him. But he doesn't have the health to enjoy everything that he's got. And his life is cut short. That's what it means to eat, to consume, to enjoy. The question from the observation is, what's the point of having all of this stuff if you don't enjoy it? It looks throughout our study in Ecclesiastes like the preacher has been building the case for a life of what's called hedonism, enjoying yourself, making pleasure be our ultimate goal, but understanding that's not what he's building the case for. He's not building the case for the wanton pursuit of pleasure. Pleasure has its place. And I want you to know that you and I do live our lives driven by pleasure. You do not enjoy doing something that causes you pain. You do not like to repeat something that causes you pain. I get so frustrated when I go to the doctor and say, Doctor, it hurts whenever I do this. And his bill comes from him giving me this advice. Well, don't do that. I don't like it when the doctor says that. But he's right. If I don't do that, it doesn't hurt, and it makes a lot of sense. If I don't want to hurt, don't do that. We do use pleasure in deciding what we do. The types of shoes that you wear on your feet. Do you have a pair of shoes in your closet that are too tight for your feet? That they hurt for you to walk around in? Do you knowingly take those shoes out of the closet and say, today I'm going to wear these shoes because they make my feet hurt? It's quite the opposite. I am not wearing those shoes. Might as well throw them away, but I paid good money for them, so I'm going to keep holding on to them because I cannot get rid of those shoes, but they hurt my feet, and I'm not going to wear those stinking shoes. This man has so much, and yet his life has been cut short. And it says that a stranger enjoys everything that he has. I think when we look in the context, comparing it to the condition of the next man, the fact that a stranger has come along and eaten and enjoyed what this man had meant that this man had no family. He had no one to leave his wealth to. That everything that he had been given, everything that he had, he didn't have length of life. He didn't have a family to share this with. Do you know anybody like that, that works so hard that they have foregone their family, or they've given up because they've chose career over their family? And Solomon's observation has really got to be making that person uncomfortable tonight, that thinks about, well, I mean, I'm so driven to work hard and to get more. But stopping and asking that question, but what's the point of having all of this because you can't take it with you? And never ever being able to enjoy all that you've been given. How tragic we see in this first example, the life that's cut short before the wealth, the blessings are enjoyed. But we look in the next couple of verses and we see the meaningless of a long life without enjoying God's blessings. Look back with me at verse 3. If a man begat 100 children, Brother Clifton, that's a lot. That's a bit excessive. Do you agree?
I agree.
You agree. Anybody think that that's a big number? I think the picture that we see here is this is a lot of kids. And he lives many years. I mean, he'd have to live many years if he was going to have 100 kids. Because biologically, that just takes a long time. But I don't want to get into that subject. See Brother Clifton if you didn't understand where that last one's point was going. But he says, so that the days of his years be many and his soul be not filled with good, that he have no burial. Perhaps this fella, this is just the condition. He has such a long life. Maybe he even has, there's not even a funeral service for him because he's still living. We're talking, when you start looking in the Old Testament about the saints who lived for a really long time, I think about like Methuselah. Can you imagine living to be Methuselah's age? Some of you say, yeah, I feel like it. No. We're not even out of our first century yet. 900 years? Can you imagine living that long? It's absolutely amazing. I saw today a statistic that today's date, 02-02-2020, is a palindrome that hasn't happened. I think it was 970 years. This is the first time in this millennia, or actually the second time in this millennia, I guess you could say, that this rare occurrence has taken place, that the numbers, the month and the date match up with the year, or they're actually the opposite of it, inverted numbers, and how that this fellow probably would have seen that last time. If this is what we're talking about here in the context, that he lives a really, really, really long time. How sad it is to be blessed with wealth and to never being enjoy it because your life's cut short, or to live a really long time and not be able to enjoy with what you have, never being appreciative of what you've got. Let me ask you the question, who is better off? The one who dies early, never knowing satisfaction, or the one who lives a really long time, never knowing satisfaction? The preacher settles it. He says in verse 4, he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness. His name shall be covered in darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. And who's he talking about? He's talking about the latter part of verse 3 when he says that an untimely birth is better than he. Quite frankly, never being born at all would be better than living a life with immense blessing and having it cut short, or to live a long life and not appreciating what you have. It would be better to never be born than to live life without knowing satisfaction. Do you know anybody that has never, ever been satisfied with what they have? You know these people. They're the people who complain. Oftentimes, their statements start off, "But it's not fair," when they think along these terms. Never, ever being satisfied with what they have. And I want you to understand how difficult it must be as a mom and dad with someone in your family like this who you sacrifice to buy those tight shoes so that they have something to wear and not appreciating. I was that way once. Growing up in a household with lots of kids and very little money, not appreciating what my sacrifices my parents made for us. My parents sometimes would have to go to Walmart and shop for our clothes, and for me that was just, I'd rather not even go to school than have to wear some clothes that came from Walmart, and I'd let my parents know that on many, many occasions. Not being satisfied with what I had. And Solomon says, for this person, never being born would be a better circumstance than to live life and not be satisfied with what you have. Do you think that's a harsh observation? Do you think it's a harsh observation to say that it would be better to never, ever have lived at all than to live life without knowing satisfaction? But note what he says as we start to move into verse 7. Pleasure isn't the primary reason for why we work and for why it is that we do what we do. How many people in here, let's be honest, when you went to work or if you're going to work tomorrow, you go to work because it gives you much pleasure doing what you do? And I'm not talking about your paycheck, because what we do is for the paycheck, right? But it's just the sheer satisfaction that you're doing something that you absolutely love. Is there anybody that would say that in here? You're looking at me and you're saying, "Well, Brandon, you better be saying that one because that's true." But it's not just the primary reason. If your boss came in tomorrow and said, "All right, the job that you're doing, our budget's been cut. I want you to stay on. You've got to keep doing your job, but we're not going to pay you anymore." How long would you continue doing that job if that were the case? I think maybe you could go on for a little while until the bill collectors start calling, and then you have to start coming in and gathering for why, how you're going to pay your bills, trying to figure out how you get ends meet, or looking for a job that lets you do what you... That's part of the contract of working. You expect to be paid, and if your employer doesn't pay you honestly, well, then you've got a problem. So when I say pleasure isn't the primary reason for our labors, I want you to understand from Scripture tonight what is our primary purpose in working. We must work in order to live. That's just the way it works. This goes back to Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. And unto Adam, this is the Lord pronouncing the curse upon Adam, and he said, "Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree which I have commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat of the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return." Part of the curse is that we have to work in order to live. There was a time when Adam and Eve enjoyed the fellowship of God in the garden of evil, but sin broke that. And tomorrow morning when your alarm clock goes off, or tonight, or whenever it is that you have to report to work, please know that the problem was started long ago in a garden by Adam. And his stubbornness, and his sinfulness, and we work, quite frankly, because we have to live. This is part of the curse. And the observation that we see here, this common evil, as the preacher describes it, is a life that ends with working really hard, but yet never experiencing a lasting or a fulfilled satisfaction. How sad. The two men, the one who has everything and dies soon, or the one who has nothing, or who lives a really long time. We don't even find anything about his funeral, but he lives a really long time and isn't satisfied. Is there satisfaction to be found in this life with the stuff that we can find under the sun? The observation we see in verse 7, all labor of a man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. This fella, or this person, isn't ever really satisfied with what they have. This is the common evil that's being described. And you say, well, is he making a case then that you and I should just stop trying? That's not what he's saying here. He's talking about the person who has put all of their hopes, they have put all of their energy in trying to gather stuff because they think this is the secret to life. Who leaves here with the most? But we come to verse 8, and we find the greatest tragedy that everyone, wise, the fool, the rich, the poor, they all meet the same end. For what hath the wise more than the fool? And what hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? So, to be a person who has everything and to never know satisfaction is going to one day leave this earth. To be a person who lives a really long time and never appreciates what they have will ultimately leave this earth, because there's not a one of us that lives forever, because the way these bodies work is we are all dying a little bit each and every day. That's why it's difficult to come to terms with what he says here. That the wise person, the person who understands how to navigate life, he's going to end up the same way that the foolish person does. The rich person, the poor person. We don't live forever. And I want you to know, this week as I was looking at this, I thought, oh, I know this reality, Lord, but that's pretty grim. But let's step back and get a different perspective of what the preacher is saying here in verses 7 and 8. Contentment comes from appreciating what you have and letting go of what you don't have. What's the driving motivation between lack of satisfaction, the person who's never happy with what they have? They want more. It's not fair. And Solomon says that right now, if you could just understand that what you have, you could learn to appreciate that and learn to appreciate that the thing that you feel like you've got to work so hard for, it's not going to give you lasting satisfaction. And learning to let go of what you don't have and what you will never have in that object. A new car, a new house, better paying job. These are good. And they are fine. There's nothing wrong with having any of those. What there is a problem with is making that our objective in life. Serving the rat race. Struggling to have more and never ever being able to stop and appreciate what we have. But stopping and appreciating what we have doesn't give us lasting satisfaction here in this life. Let's go back and just work through that pretty quickly. You and I have an interesting behaviors. Can you think back to when you were a child and you asked for something that you needed when you were a child? And you knew that the one thing that you, if you could just get it, your life would be complete. That was it. You wouldn't need anything else ever again. Did you ever petition your parents or your grandparents or somebody that you knew about letting you get that thing that you knew that was just going to bring you that satisfaction? Maybe it was a soft drink on a hot day. You were just really thirsty and you felt like you need to have that soft drink. I say that in here because there's people in the back of the room saying, really? People would give everything just to have a soft drink? Yeah, you don't realize how blessed we are today. It was quite simpler times back in the day. But once you got it and you drank it, it was gone so fast, and there really wasn't any lasting satisfaction in that. Oh, you get to trade in the bottle for a deposit, maybe get a little bit back, but the thing that you asked for didn't satisfy. Maybe you grow up and it was getting a car. That's the thing that would give you this, that's the answer. If you could just get a car, you could go wherever you wanted. You know what? The day I got a car was the day that my problems compounded, because then you have all kinds of problems. Ain't that right, Miss Patsy? The windows don't work. Sometimes you can't get in the gas tank. It just seems to be that cars, that the more we get, the greater the level of difficulty that comes with our blessings. The point that I see here in this portion of the passage is the full values blessings in terms of enrichment, what all I've got. But it's the wise person who values in terms of enjoyment, learning to appreciate what I have. And that said, because a fool doesn't appreciate the difficulties of life. A fool doesn't appreciate a medical diagnosis that is incredibly frightening. But I want to say for people that I've known, or even talking to my doctor, I've got relatively great health, but the one or two times the doctor has told me about some medical condition that I had, when he talked to me about the skin cancer on my face, he said the word cancer, and that's it. That's all I heard. And that diagnosis, I left the hospital in shock. But over the next few days, the Lord gave me a perspective that was freeing. That, you know what? Can I thank God for all that He's given me? Or do I only thank Him for just the things that I consider are good that He's given me? Remember, the observation that the preacher is making here at this point has not said anything really about the Lord. Oh, we've had a couple of passages we talked about making your vows. But this is trying to find our satisfaction in this life with the stuff that we spend our life pursuing. And the fool is the one who values our blessings in life in terms of enrichment, how much I have. It's the wise person who values it in terms of enjoyment. Am I satisfied with where the Lord has me, what the Lord has given me? That's where we head now with this eyesight insight into learning to be content with what we can see. In Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 9, read along with me. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This also is vanity and a vexation of spirit. That which hath been is named already and is known, that is a man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? For who knoweth what is good for a man in this life? All the days of his van, what shall be after him under the sun? And this eyesight perspective we see from the preacher, that emptiness is filled with craving more than what you actually see. That's what leads to an empty, unsatisfied life, is wanting more and not being able to see all that you have. The common evil is never appreciating what you have because you want more than you have. I'm talking about terms now of contentment. And it, again, it is not wrong to have stuff. it's not wrong that the Lord has blessed you with a lot of stuff. The error is resting and trusting in that stuff. As a matter of fact, this is the last time we're going to see this phrase come up here, the vexation of spirit. The unfulfilled life is as satisfying as trying to wrestle the wind. The person who can't see all that they have, who constantly wants to go after more, it's as successful of attempt as trying to wrestle the wind. Some of you were wrestling against the wind coming in here. You're trying to keep your hair set in place, but you weren't winning. I want you to know you didn't win. And you can probably see on my head tonight that I didn't win when I came into the church. I probably didn't even take any mind of it. Usually some people tell me to move my hair over. I think that means they're either saying wrap it up, get going, or fix your hair, one or the other. And nobody's doing that right now, so maybe it wasn't so. Thank you. Is that better? Now you're doing this. Wrap it up, wrap it up, wrap it up. The unfulfilled life is just as satisfying as trying to wrestle the wind. But where he goes in this next couple of verses is rather remarkable, because here we now have the transition. We're moving away from observations, and we're going to start getting into observations of how we should live and conduct ourselves throughout the remainder of the book. There starts to be a change in the direction for those of you who've been looking for. Give us some instruction on how we're supposed to live. Quit telling us about all of the bad observations that we see. But if we don't answer those questions, we can't appreciate where we're headed. And he says here, you cannot argue with the one who knows the beginning and the end. We see in verse 10, that which has been named already, that which is known, that is, it's man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. You can't argue with God who knows, who has known. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 26, the prophet tells us this way, lift up your eyes on high and behold who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for he is strong in power and not one faileth. There's not an observation here about following. He's just saying you cannot argue with God about what's best for your life, because we don't have that perspective. You can't argue with God about what you have, because we don't have that authority. But let's face it, when you and I are complaining about our circumstance, about what we have or what we don't have, we're not thinking in terms of that bootstrap faith or self-reliance. You know, that I picked myself up by my own bootstraps. I've made all of this. I'm the master. I'm the captain of my soul. I'm the master of all that there is. We don't think about it in terms like that. We think about it in terms of, I'm really resentful that the Lord didn't deliver me in this circumstance. The Lord didn't answer my prayer that way, and I asked him for it. But you have to remember, when it comes to having our prayers answered, that the Lord does answer our prayers. We just assume that because we ask, he always has to say yes. Sometimes he says no, we know that. Sometimes he says wait. And for us, wait is just as bad as no, because waiting is really hard. I mean, a no, that's clear cut. You can have your temper tantrum and you can go about your business, but a wait? Put me on hold? That is hard to come to terms with. And the observation is, you can't argue with the one who knows the end from the beginning. Which leads us now to verse 12, for who knoweth what is good for a man in this life, all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can a man, can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? This is the high point of the tragedy. Because, you know, you're talking about the first part of chapter 6, it's the man who has a lot and his life's cut short, or the man who has a lot and his life's long and he's not satisfied, not happy, or content with what he has. Those are in the theoretical realm, but you know what? This verse speaks right to each and every one of us of that reality, of this real certainty. Life is short. I never ever dreamed how short life was until we moved our service back from 6 o'clock to 5 o'clock, how fast the afternoon went. It didn't seem fair. I looked at Melina and I said, what was I thinking? It went by so fast. And that's just hour by hour. But when I were to ask you, a lot of you in here can remember, just like it was yesterday, it seems to be how fast life goes. And that is a blessing, to be reminded of that reality of how quick life is, of how brief life is. But from that observation, here's the takeaway. We don't know how today's going to end. We don't know what's in store in the next moment. We can just see right here. Our perspective is really, really limited. It's limited by seconds. A lot of times our life is really marked by what happened in the past. We hold on to a lot of things that we carried in the past. A lot of our struggles that we had in the past, and that really does rob us. There's something I heard, Will Rogers once said, don't let today be robbed too much of what the troubles of yesterday. And I like that. But we live thinking so much about the slights, about what happened yesterday, that we lose the perspective of right now. Or we worry about tomorrow. And I want you to know, I'm one of the worst about that, worrying about tomorrow. You know, there's all those problems, work, family, money, health, all those things that we talked about at the beginning of the hour. And quite frankly, we don't know what the next moment holds. We don't know how today will end. And that's disconcerting. And if we don't know how today will end, we certainly don't know what tomorrow holds. And chapter 6 starts out with that man who's given the great wealth and the riches and the honor. And what kind of legacy was left for him? His life was cut short before we even realized his full potential. What in the world shall be said about the man tomorrow? Who can tell what shall be after him under the sun? Who can tell what's in store for us tomorrow? And I want to ask you, what's the greater worry for you? What happened long ago? What's going to happen tomorrow? Or what's happening right now? I know a lot of people who get hung up on something that happened long ago. And you know what? This is a great place to let it go tonight, because you can't do anything about that. And for tomorrow, we don't know. We just have to trust the good blessings of our Creator, of our God, that He will be with us there, wherever that journey goes. And I don't want to sound harsh or cold, but even if it means discomfort, if it means losing your job or running out of money or family problems or health issues, trusting the Lord that in spite of all of that, I want my satisfaction to be in the only one who has the power to give me satisfaction right now. Because we've been building week by week the case that there is nothing under the sun that gives us satisfaction. So tonight, as I wrap that section up, you cannot change your past. But you can change your perspective and begin to see what God has given you. All of it. and our lives are filled with so much good and bad. And it takes a lot to be able to get to that place where we can say, Lord, I thank you for the good, because that was really enjoyable. And I thank you for the times that weren't so good. That fool whose life was cut short, that fool who lived a really long life, neither one of them knew satisfaction, but I want you to know tonight, we can have satisfaction in the here and now. Here's our response as we close. The fool values blessings in terms of enrichment, but the wise values it in terms of enjoyment. You can't find satisfaction in something that never could bring satisfaction, so give that pursuit up. The satisfaction of our job certainly does keep us busy, but remember, the purpose behind that is laboring. It's part of the curse of, it's part of the reason why your boss sometimes is so mean. It's the curse. Just say that's what it is. It's the curse. And if you love what you're doing, praise the Lord. That's a double blessing. And your family? Think about all the struggles that we've had over the years. And that does lead us up to this point, but know that you can move past the past into right now by that change of perspective. Lord, where we are at today is because of where you have taken us in the past. And Lord, can't do anything about that. I just want to give you my heart, and I want you to take what's left of my life right now and use it for your glory. Only Jesus can turn. Only Jesus can give you a new heart that appreciates all that he has given you. So our prayer tonight as we close, Lord, give me satisfaction that's found only in you.